Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Medical Minds Conversations with Guthrie Experts. Happy to be here. I'm Steve Osterhaus alongside Dr. Corinne Johnston. Good morning, Dr. Johnston. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. Doing well here. We finally hit that sunny part, nice weather in our part of the country, which seems to make everyone smile. Today, we're going to speak with one of our experts in urology to really talk about a topic that is common in the outpatient world and sometimes even makes its way into the emergency room, and that's urinary tract infections. And this is something that a lot of times causes a lot of discomfort, a lot of urgency in patients to get into that doctor's office and get treated. So looking forward to some insight today.
And what we're also going to find out is, while obviously commonly impacts women, men can also be impacted, which I was surprised to hear a little bit about. So really excited for this topic today.
So with us today, we have Dr. Vineet Agrawal. Dr. Agrawal is a board-certified urologist with a special interest in robotic-assisted surgeries. He also serves as the division chief of urology for the majority of the Guthrie footprint. Vineet, welcome.
Thank you. Look forward to this episode today.
Yeah. So we're going to start with a pretty simple question for our listeners, and that is, what is a urologist and what things do you see?
So urologist is a physician and a surgeon who deals with the parts of the human body which makes and stores the urine. So we all know we have two kidneys and two kidney pipes. The urine is made in the kidneys. It is transported down the kidney pipes, also called the ureters, into the bladder. So the bladder's job is to store the urine and pass urine when it is socially appropriate. So a urologist looks after the urology tract in men and women, but in men, we also look after the genital tracts, which is also deals with the fertility and being a father. That aspect in a woman is looked by a gynecologist.
So, we're talking, kind of specifically about UTIs. And I guess let's start in the broad sense about, like, what is a UTI?
So UTI is, as the word says, urinary tract infections. So it could be anywhere from the kidneys to the bladder, and in a case of a man, also in the prostate. So what keeps us urologists busy is repeated bladder infections. So also called as recurrent cystitis. So urinary tract infection is an infection typically with a bacteria, not with a fungus or a virus, anywhere from the kidneys to the bladder. But it is the bladder infections which is what is frustrating and is a common thing we see in our offices every day, whether be it a primary care service or a urologist's office.
Yeah, I think that the majority of our listeners, whoever have had maybe one of those urinary tract infections, know that they often are bothersome. So what are some of those common symptoms for those who have not had the experience that they may notice that would lead to a visit with you or me?
So classically, the patient or the woman would say that they have to go to urine more often, and that is day and night, and that is more than what they usually do. They also have a sense of what we call as urgency, which means having to rush to the bathroom, along with some pain in the lower belly area, which we call the suprapubic area. These three are the classic hallmarks of a urinary tract infection of the bladder. Along with that, you can have a cloudy or a smelly urine. Having said that, you can have those despite not having a UTI. So having to go more often, having to run to the bathroom, and lower belly pain are the classic hallmarks of a bladder infection.
So I know this is kind of obvious, but with most issues, don't wait, right? If you're having an issue, seek out help right away, right? Because UTI specifically can become very serious.
Yes and no. So if your symptoms are mild, yes, it's okay to seek help. But do not be surprised if your physician does not treat you right away. They may help with painkiller for the urinary system, and you may have come across something called the azo, which is even over the counter. They may want to wait for the urine that you have submitted for the culture to come back before treating you appropriately. giving you antibiotics before the culture is back may mean that you are getting the wrong antibiotic. Clearly, if you have, apart from those symptoms, if you have fever and low back pain, that is a reason to be visiting the ER or your physician right away, because that might mean the infection is no longer in the bladder, but may have gone up to the kidneys. And that is a whole different discussion.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Dr. Agarwal. We talk on the podcast quite a bit. What is the ER? What is primary care and acute care, a walk-in clinic? So there's differentiators of fever,
correct,
if they can eat or drink, where the pain is located. I think that's great. And is this a common thing? Is this something that most women deal with? Is it just a small percentage of women? What are our numbers look like?
So it's half the women in their lifetime will get at least one episode of what is called cystitis or bladder infection. 30% of those will continue to get infections again and again. Mm-hmm. So put into context, a man has a 10% chance of getting an infection in their lifetime, while a woman between 50 to 60%. Mm-hmm. And that is based on our anatomy. So in a man, the bacteria from the fecal flora, which is the bowels, has to go through the long urethra, and there are defenses mechanism around that. But in a woman, that is not the case. So that explains why women get more infection than men.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you said culture, and you mentioned some different things in your earlier answer. Can you tease those out a little bit? So if I come in, I think I have a urinary tract infection, I probably shouldn't pee in the waiting room, right? Or in the waiting room bathroom. I should wait until I get back to my doctor.
Yes. I mean, if you're clearly having a desire to just, you cannot wait, you have to pass urine, you can drink more water and give us a specimen. So if you were to come to a physician's office, obviously, first of all, we would be asking you some questions. But if we're talking about what specimens we are collecting, we are first collecting a urine and we do something called a dipstick. Think of it like a swimming pool pH test. So that dipstick has a lot of what we call as reagents, which can check for whether you have blood in the urine, whether you have something called white blood cells in your urine, and also if you have a suggestions of an infection. So that is available right away, but the culture can take between 24 to 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm the perfect person, obviously, for this podcast. And I'm glad you made the comment about peeing in the bathroom, Dr. Johnson. So thank you. Or in the waiting room, I mean.
Just in case there was any confusion.
Yes. So obviously you talked about percentages, men versus women. And this is, of course, just another reason why we as men have it easier in life. So I fully admit
thank
that.
Thank you, Steve.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, age-wise, you know, so we know obviously it impacts women more, but as you grow older, are you more susceptible?
So there are some children who get infections, but chances are they have something anatomically not normal, like what is called reflux. So the urine is tracking up the bladder into the kidneys, which should not happen. Outside of that, urinary tract infection is mostly noted in women when they first become sexually active. And there's also a word called honeymoon cystitis. And some women continue to get them in their 30s and 40s. We also see a spike after women hit menopause. And we can talk a bit more later, but that is due to the estrogen content or how much estrogenization is happening in the private parts of a woman or the genitalia.
In that honeymoon cystitis, I think, you know, we still have that very commonly in primary care. I'll get, you know, well, do I need to take a medicine every time I have sex because I'm more likely to get an infection? Is that a wives' tale, old wives' tale, or is that a real thing?
If a woman is very clear that the infections are related to sexual activity, it is permissible to take an antibiotic either before or after sex, just a single dose. And it's something I use it in my practice all the time. Mm-hmm. And we have seen results where they do not get repeated infection. And that avoids them having to take antibiotics every night for 3 months, which is a different strategy. Mm-hmm. On that note, we can also use non-antibiotic measures like using cranberry supplements after sex as well.
Mm-hmm. How does that help? How does, because I think you hear that a lot. I started drinking cranberry juice or I take a cranberry pill.
So cranberry has an element called PAC, and there's a medical word, full form for that. And that prevents the attachment of the bacteria to the bladder lining. Mm-hmm. So that is how cranberry has been used. And cranberry can come in various forms. It can be a juice, it can be a cocktail, it can be a powdered form, or it can be a pill. Mm-hmm. And you can go to any major grocery store and buy the cranberry, but it has to have at least 35 milligrams of the PAC. And if you were to have the juice, you end up consuming a lot of calories, about 500 to 600 calories to get that amount of PAC. So really, the best form is the soluble PAC, mm-hmm. and it has to have at least 35 milligrams of it. So I personally recommend patients use something called Elura, which is E-L-L-U-R-A, and mm-hmm. they make a cranberry supplement, which is really effective, mm-hmm. Because you can end up spending a lot of money and having the inappropriate amount of cranberry. So going back to your question, how it works is it prevents the bacteria to attach to the bladder wall.
Okay.
So in preparation for this episode, talking about a lot of different cases when individuals, specifically women, may encounter more UTIs. But I noticed the word, you know, when women are traveling, sometimes it's the case. Could you speak about that?
Yeah. So it is not very often you'll hear this, but there are some women who will relate when you ask them, especially if you really ask that probing question, does their repeated bladder infection happen with sexual activity, but also, let's say, with walking a lot or working for long hours? So I will admit this is not a very common situation, but if that were the case, then you can also take an antibiotic or cranberry before traveling, or if you've worked a long shift, etc.
What is it about that? Is it that they're maybe not drinking as much water to flush that kind of system that you're talking about, or making it, you know, not holding their urine? I feel like women do that quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a matter of getting dehydrated. If you're working a lot and at the same time not drinking enough, you have to have your bladder flushed of those bacteria every 3 to 4 hours. So the common advice is to pass urine about 7 to 8 times in the waking hours. And if you only do that 3 to 4 times, that means that either you are not hydrating yourself well, or you are sweating a lot, etc., by working too hard. So it's a combination of those two, but it's not very common. But if it were the case, that seems to be the reasonable explanation.
You said we get to a little bit later, so I figure we'll bring it up right now, but with menopause, how does that impact women and UTIs? And could you speak a little bit more about that?
So estrogen, which is present in premenopausal women, makes the private parts or the genitalia very supple by producing something called glycogen. And when you are menopausal or perimenopausal, which means around the time that menopause is setting in, the estrogen level goes down and hence the glycogen goes down. So you have something called lactobacillus, which is the fecal flora from your bowels. So the lactobacillus no longer have an affinity for that area because glycogen is required for the lactobacillus to get attached. In the absence of lactobacillus getting attached, you have the other fecal flora, which can then invade the bladder in a woman. So that is the reason that we also treat postmenopausal or perimenopausal women with repeated bladder infection with vaginal supplementation, whether it be the form of a pessary or a ring or tablets. But these are tablets you insert in the vagina as opposed to taking orally.
Yeah. So Dr. Agrawal, before we get to why does a how does a patient make their way to you, right? How do we pass to urologist and what things you might do to further investigate? I think, you know, when I think of this, UTIs are probably one of the most common things that I get a phone call or a portal message. Can you just send in an antibiotic for me? And I, you know, will often say all that burns with urination is not a urinary tract infection. What are some of those other things that can cause that burning? And we're not just trying to be mean, right? And make you come in for a visit.
That's a great point. There are other conditions. There's something called interstitial cystitis. You may have heard of it, or now it is called painful bladder syndrome. That can cause burning. Sometimes the patient may confuse what is an overactive bladder, which means having to go more often in the day and nighttime and having to rush to the bathroom, as a UTI. But the classic hallmark is there is no lower belly pain with that. Sometimes you can have a smelly or cloudy urine, but that does not equate to an infection because it could be vaginitis. Mm-hmm. So completely agree that, you know, not every burning is an infection. And that's why we emphasize the need to collect a urine specimen and a culture. Even if we can start the treatment, but having the culture helps, because then 2 days later, when the results come back, we may be able to change the antibiotics.
And how long can that treatment last? You know, you said you might be able to change the antibiotics, but I guess it obviously depends on the case, correct?
So we treat for no longer than 7 days. And depending on the antibiotic, there is some antibiotic which is called fosfomycin, which is just given as a single dose. You also have antibiotics which you can give for 3 days, twice daily, and other one which you can give for between 5 to 7 days. So let's say if a patient calls on a weekend, like the example you gave, Dr. Johnston, and you do not have time to wait for the cultures to come back, you can start them on antibiotic. And hopefully the culture would suggest that that bacteria is responding to the antibiotic which you gave as a first line. If it is not responding, you can change it, but you still want to use it for the number of days you would have used it anyway. So it's between 3 to 5 days, depending on which antibiotic you have used.
So let's talk about the patient that makes their way to the urologist's office. What does that look like for them? What should they expect?
So if a patient has been referred by a primary care physician, I take it that they have repeated infections, which has clearly been so frustrating that, let's say, a specialist is now needed. Mm-hmm. So I go back to asking them detailed questions, and that will include clearly the symptoms to distinguish it from other things which may mimic a urinary tract infection, like we mentioned, such as overactive bladder, painful bladder syndrome. So the symptoms should be the lower belly pain, the frequency, and the urgency. We also ask if they've had it before, if they've had cultures, do we have access to those cultures? Is it the same bacteria or is it different bacterias? We also ask about a family history of repeated bladder infections, because it has been shown to have a genetic component. There are some things in the history which would suggest to be a risk factor. So using a spermicidal can be a risk factor. Using a barrier contraceptive such as a condom can be a risk factor. We ask them about their fluid intake, because we suggest to drink about 1.5 to 2 liters of fluid every day to prevent infections. And if it turns out that they're drinking less, clearly that's an easy fix. We also ask them about their hygiene practices. One of the myths I would like to dispel here is that women sometimes blame themselves for their repeated infection, thinking that they are not clean and dirty. That's not the case, because for too long, there have been a lot of myths about, you know, passing urine before intercourse or wiping from front backwards. Recent studies have shown that is not necessarily the case. You can pass urine after intercourse, but passing before is not necessarily true. And a lot of women actually then start using a lot of soap and douching and wipe, cleaning themselves a lot. That can actually take away the good bacteria which needs to be there to fight the bad bacteria. So we ask about the hygiene practices. And then we ask about other risk factors, such as have they got a history of kidney stones, or have they had history of catheters, or have they had surgery with a urologist? But because clearly that can all be a risk factors for having stones. So there are other questions we ask in the history. It's a detailed history, but then we go on to examining the patient. And that includes with the help of a female nurse, a chaperone, we call it. And we ask the permission of the patient. And then we, first of all, we inspect the pelvic area for, depending on the age of the patient, if they are peri or postmenopausal, there might be dryness of the vagina. It's called atrophic vaginitis. Then we look for something called a urethral diverticulum, which is like an outpouching of the bladder opening, which is the urethra, because sometimes urine can collect in there. So by pressing on it, if it were a diverticulum, it is painful for the patient. That's mostly not the case. And then we ask the patient to bear down and see if any of the organs in that compartment come down. So whether the bladder is pushing down, or the uterus is pushing down, or the rectum is pushing down. So that's the examination, which helps us a lot. And by pressing on certain points, we can also elicit if the patient has any pain in that area, because that might suggest fibromyalgia or painful bladder syndrome.
Yeah.
And we also look for how much urine is being left in the bladder after passing urine. So that's very important to know that the patient is emptying her bladder well. So beyond that, we will take a urine sample for a dipstick. We get some idea of what is happening right away. And then we send it for culture if the symptoms are classical, or if the urine dip suggests that there is an infection. And then we will start the patient on the antibiotic if they are symptomatic while we're waiting for the culture, and we may have to change the antibiotic depending on the sensitivities. As far as further investigations, such as more invasive tests like ultrasound of the kidneys, or a look inside the bladder with a telescope and a camera called cystoscopy, we reserve it for patients who get repeated infections pretty frequently despite you giving them antibiotics, or if they have a history of kidney stones or a history of surgery of the urinary tract as a child. We do not have to do those tests in the first instance.
So I know, I mean, this is kind of a worst case scenario, so I apologize for going that direction. But once somebody is hospitalized, and what I found in previous conversations with family over the years is this, how surprising it is that the individual with the UTI not only has the normal physical symptoms, but starts to kind of, I don't want to say delirious, but is just mentally doesn't have all their faculties because of the impact the UTI is having. And again, from a male point of view, that seems just very wild and extremely scary when somebody changes who they are because they don't even realize this is happening to them.
Yes. So if you're hospitalized, it is most likely infection of the kidneys which has brought you in, because the kidneys are very close to the major blood vessels of the body. And if you have infection of the kidney, it can enter the blood vessel and then go throughout your body. It's called a systemic infection. Bladder infections typically don't do that. There are also patients who have catheters in the hospital, whether it be inserted during that admission or they have a catheter for a long time, which gets changed every month. In 3 months, every such patient with a long-term catheter will have bacteria in their urine. It does not mean that they have an infection. They just have bacteria. And when such patients get delirious, it is sometimes incorrectly put down to having a urinary tract infection. So we are very clear that we want to look for other causes of the fever, because it could be a lung infection. It could be other infections. If that is not the case, then we say that the bacteria in the urine is the cause, and then we treat appropriately. But you're absolutely correct that infections of the kidney with fever can be dangerous, and we take it seriously. Such patients do not just receive antibiotics in the community, but they need antibiotics in the vein called IV antibiotics. We also involve our infectious diseases colleagues. So I'm a urologist, but we have a very good infectious diseases team here at Guthrie who then look at the cultures even with more precision and sometimes have to use antibiotics, which are not very commonly used.
And we see that, right? Sometimes, unfortunately, I can remember in my training patients that have had so many types of antibiotics, they have resistance now.
Correct. And antibiotic resistance is a big issue. We are even worried that we may not have many antibiotics if we continue to abuse them. So we have to be good stewards of antibiotics, use them appropriately for the right duration. And they also have collateral damage. Antibiotics have side effects. You may have heard of Clostridium difficile infection by ciprofloxacin. Mm-hmm. So we have to be very careful when we use antibiotics. I agree with you.
So let's focus on the men for a minute. So that smaller percentage that come in with you mentioned prostatitis. So tell us a little bit more about that. Most men that have had that know, right? That is not a comfortable problem to have.
Yes, and again, that's a frustrating condition to have and to treat. Prostate does not have a very good blood supply. And if you were to give antibiotics, typically you do it for 4 weeks as opposed to a week in women for bladder infections. And the symptoms are pain in what is called the perineum, the area between the rectum and the scrotum, pain on ejaculation, pain in the inner thighs, pain in the scrotum, burning during passage of urine. It's a bit non-specific. It's a bit deep-seated. They cannot pinpoint, but we ask these questions and establish that it is an infection of the prostate. If you were to take a urine sample, you may not get an evidence of infection because the prostate may not secrete the bacteria at the time you get the urine. And not every antibiotic penetrates the prostate. So, for example, we use something called nitrofurantoin when we treat women for 3 days. And nitrofurantoin is not very effective for the prostate. So we use something called as Bactrim or Cefalexin. We have gone away from using ciprofloxacin because of tendon rupture, tendinitis, and Clostridium difficile infections. So prostatitis is a challenging situation, but there are other treatments apart from antibiotics. It is to relax the prostate or the bladder neck with something called Tamsulosin or Flomax. You may have heard of that. That opens the prostate channels and that helps too. But it is not uncommon to see men come back again and again. And sometimes we have to get help of our physiotherapy colleagues because it is more than an infection. It gets to the point of almost like a phantom pain and chronic pain situation. So clearly not an easy condition to treat.
Yeah. And it's probably important as you're talking about prostatitis, we didn't really, you know, hit on this and when we were talking about this podcast, but sexually transmitted infections in certain populations can present like a urinary tract infection. So really that importance of seeing your doctor.
Correct. And that is more in a slightly younger age group. And they will have a classic symptom of penile discharge, which is not what you see with bladder infections, for example. And you have specific tests for that. It's called gonorrhea or chlamydia testing. And that is a different patient population, but you bring up a good point. STDs are also common.
Yeah.
Dr. Agarwal, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you really want to make sure you get a message across before we bring the podcast to a close?
I would like to touch on some of the things which are more topical right now. So a lot of patients in diabetic world are using Januvia. And we have seen that Januvia works by having your sugar excreted from your body into the bladder, but that leads to higher urinary tract infections because the bladder, like the bacteria, like to feed on the sugar. So sometimes we have to get the help of our diabetes specialists and either get them to change the medication. So that is something which is a more recent thing because Januvia is a newer drug for diabetes. You may also have heard about vaccines. It's been in the pipeline for many years. but vaccines to prevent UTI is not ready for prime time yet. And there is also something called genitourinary syndrome of menopause, GSM. So that is becoming, thankfully, more and more talked about in our communities and world, medical world now, where women after menopause benefit from estrogen supplementation, not only for repeated infections, but even if they don't have that, it is just a healthy thing to do. It's a bit like a man getting testosterone replacement therapy if correctly indicated. Mm-hmm. So I think we have covered a lot of how repeated bladder infections, how common they are, how frustrating it is, what are the causes, what are some of the things we ask when we see the patient in the office, what do we examine, what investigations we do. We do not have to be very invasive with ultrasound or cystoscopies, and using the antibiotics appropriately, being good antibiotic stewards, using non-antibiotic prophylaxis. Prophylaxis just means prevention. So we talked about cranberry. You may have heard of D-mannose. Recent studies have shown that it does not have too much of a role. It is really just a sugar, and it is expensive and does not add much. So I do not use that in my practice. You may have heard of methenamine, also called as Hyprex. That has a lot of good evidence its way. That is another way to help patients without giving them antibiotics. You can use lactobacillus probiotics in yogurt. So those are some of the prevention strategies. And then in the perimenopausal and postmenopausal segment of women, using estrogen pills or suppositories or rings are very useful. So those would be my take-home message. And also, women should not feel bad that they have done something wrong. It is just how we are. Some people have genetic or hormonal risk factors for getting repeated infections, but there is help.
I think those are all great points. And that thought too, that, you know, often this is something that women go to maybe not their primary doctor for, right? Maybe they're going to acute cares, walk-in clinics, and no one's really actually noticing that they're having a UTI every month, every other month. So if you are noticing that and going to different places, it's a reason to see an established provider to kind of go through that process you so eloquently told us about.
Yeah. And if I can, on the back of that, if you are given an antibiotic, do finish the course, because if you feel better within a day or two and you stop the antibiotic, the bacteria is still there. It's going to come back. It's rear its head later. So do finish the course, so whether it's 3 days or 7 days.
Awesome. Dr. Agarwal, thank you so much. I know I have personally learned a lot, but I think our listeners and viewers have as well. So thank you so much.
No, thank you for the opportunity.
So some great discussion today with Dr. Agarwal about prevention strategies for prevention of urinary tract infections, some ideas for management that include oftentimes seeing your doctor, but also some other things that may be causing those symptoms that are not an infection and don't require an antibiotic. So really appreciative to Dr. Agarwal for joining us today and enlightening us. And hope that you took home something as well to use.
Yeah, it's certainly a helpful episode for so many of our listeners and viewers. And if you'd like any other additional helpful advice, be sure, as always, to check out Guthrie.org/engage. There's some simple, basic, at your fingertips advice to get you through your day and living a healthier lifestyle. So until next week, have a great week, Dr. Johnson.
Thanks, Steve. You too.